Dr. N, are you saying your energy aura is like a sieve? S, laughs, sometimes it seems like it, on the left. By serving as a blocking agent for thoughts which might escape, he serves as a backboard, bouncing thought waves back into me for better retention. This assists in my comprehension. Dr. N, do you think he adds his own thoughts to this process? S, sure he does. He wants it all to penetrate and stay with me. Subsequent questioning with other clients confirmed the backboard effect case 37 told me about. At the beginning of their incarnations, while souls are learning to utilize unique and complex circuit patterns, they find that most human brains are not balanced between the right and left hemispheres. I am told that no two host bodies are the same in the way our brain hemispheres are linked to process critical judgment, creativity and language communication. This is a primary reason why the wiser souls join the fetus of a new body early rather than late in a mother's term. Past life regression therapists work with the physical body imprints of former lives that may be disabling to their client's current body. Typically, these people come to us after traditional medicine has not given them relief. For example, a physical problem may be referred discomfort from a violent past life death. Part of our job is to deprogram these carryovers whenever they become debilitating to the client. In Chapter 4, we saw how body imprints also affect souls who cross back into the spirit world with physical energy damage. I must say that before Case 37 I never imagined a human body imprint could affect communication at council meetings. I was aware that during the course of these hearings, council members might communicate with each other in a rapid pitch of high and low vibrations. The average soul misses most of this sort of intercommunication between elders. The scrambling effect here is apparently intentional. I think it is safe to conclude that any conversation at council meetings requiring interpretation is usually handled by our guides. I have a rather unorthodox but effective procedure for a spiritual regressionist to use that relates to communication and the council. When I am working with a subject in front of their council, I frequently tell them to ask the elders and attending guide if they know my spirit guide. The client usually answers in the affirmative, saying something to the effect that all masters know each other in the spirit world. One will then follow up with a question about why the client thinks these masters, their guide, and my guide conspired to bring them to my office on this particular day. The answers can be very revealing since my clients feel synchronicity is at work. Within this process of hypnosis methodology, more often than not a subject will remark, "You know, I see your guide suspended over your left shoulder helping you and laughing at your efforts to acquire more information about the spirit world than you need to know." Souls who come before their respective councils have been debriefed during orientation sessions with their guides. However, it is in front of the council where souls feel most vulnerable about their past performance. The object of council meetings is not to demean the souls who come before them or to punish them for their shortcomings. The purpose of the elders is to question the soul in order to help them achieve their goals in the next lifetime. Every soul has an awareness of the inquiry format for their life review, although they know that no two council visits will be the same. At the meetings for the younger souls, I have noticed both guides and council members are especially indulgent and solicitous. During my early research on council meetings, one learned that directed questioning by these spiritual masters toward my subjects was both firm and benevolent at the same time. I'll admit that when I initially heard about these hearings, there were doubts in my mind. I felt that if a soul was summoned to appear before a body of high beings, there were going to be certain punitive aspects to a karmic review. This was due to my own cultural conditioning. Finally, I came to the realization that going before a council has many facets. The elders are like loving but firm parents, managing directors, encouraging teachers and behavioral counselors all rolled into one. What souls feel for their council is reverence. Actually, souls themselves are their own severest critics. I find evaluations by our soul group companions to be far more acerbic than any council elder, although our peers do lace their criticism with humor. During the time when souls are moving toward the space where their counsel is waiting, there are mixed reactions. I have had subjects say they are looking forward to seeing the elders to get a higher perspective on their progress. Others are apprehensive, but this soon passes once the proceedings begin. The elders have a way of making the souls who come before them feel welcome almost at once. One of the most obvious differences between a courtroom on earth and a spiritual gathering of grandmasters is the fact that everyone in the chamber is telepathic. Thus, all in attendance know the whole truth about every aspect of our conduct and the choices we made in the last life. Deception is impossible. There is no need for rules of evidence, defense attorneys or juries. So that they can properly plan for our future, the elders want to make sure that we totally understand the consequences of our actions, particularly toward others. I.e. elders ask us how we feel about major episodes in our lives and our courses of action. Desirable actions and those that were counterproductive are discussed openly with us without acrimony or finger pointing. Regardless of the number of times we continue to make the same mistakes, our counsel has enormous patience with us. We have much less patience with ourselves. I believe if the counsels of all the souls from Earth I have worked with were not so indulgent, the average soul would simply give up and not come back. Souls have this right of refusal to return to Earth. The elders probe for answers of how we think our host body served or hindered development. The council is already considering our next, potential body and future environment. They wish to know how we feel about another incarnation. Many subjects have the sense that their council has not yet made up their minds about future lives for us. Nothing about this meeting appears to be rubber-stamped. Our intent in life is of utmost importance at council meetings. The elders know all about us before we appear. But during the deliberations, how our soul-mind interfaced with a human brain is carefully analyzed. They know our past record with other host bodies. This includes the control, or lack of it, we exercised over the baser natures and negative emotions of bodies on Earth. Compulsions, illusions and attachments are never offered as excuses by souls for their conduct. I am not saying souls don't complain about their difficulties in front of councils. However, rationalizations about life's trials are not substituted for brutal honesty. The council is looking to see if the inner immortal character of our soul maintained its integrity in terms of values, ideals and action during incarnation. They want to know if we were submerged by our host body, or did we shine through? Did our soul effectively merge as a partner to the human brain as one harmonious outward human personality? Council members question souls about the use of power. Was our influence positive, or corrupted by the need to dominate others? Were we led by the convictions of others, demonstrating no personal power, or did we make original contributions? The council is not so concerned about how many times we fell down in our progress through life, but whether we had the courage to pick ourselves up and finish strong. Appearance and composition of the council. The word elder is considered appropriate by many clients because the advanced beings who sit on their councils are visualized as elderly men. They are frequently depicted as having bald heads, or white hair and perhaps beards. In questioning people about the gender of these beings, I have come to some conclusions. The high predominance of older males seen on the councils is a cultural stereotype. Wisdom is associated with age and men are seen more often than women because of our long history of male dominance in positions of authority. There are two factors that create these stereotypical images. 1. What is projected to you from the council is intended to impact your own experiences and conceptions as a soul from Earth. 2. Memory recall in regression involves an overlaying process. While subjects relive their experiences in front of the council in a pure soul state, they are also communicating to me from their current body with all the cultural influences which exist in life today. We are under the same influences as discarnates when we project a set of facial features from a past life to members of our spirit group. This reflects both our character and mood at the moment, as well as creating a form of instant recognition to souls who might not have seen us in a while. I am certain that regression therapists who perform my sort of work in future years will find as many women as men on these councils. Bear in mind that when I review a council meeting, it is usually between former lives in past centuries. I always take timelines into consideration when evaluating the reality of a spirit world seen in the mind of a client. Having made this statement about gender bias, I must add that most of my advanced clients, along with large numbers of intermediate souls, see their councils as androgynous. An elder may appear as sexless or be of mixed gender, flashing both male and female images to the soul. Nevertheless, since almost all my clients either cannot or will not give me the names of their council members, they tend to call them he rather than she, despite a genderless appearance. Spirit guides, on the other hand, are represented equally as male and female between clients. Returning to figure 8, the reader will notice that the position of the council table, A, is toward the back of the rotunda. The soul, B, stands directly in the center of the room. Most of my clients say, "We stand out of respect." I'm not sure they have a choice. I have had more advanced souls actually sit at one end of the table with their council, but this is quite uncommon and considered presumptuous by the average soul. When I am told that there is no table and the elders wish my client to join them informally, I know I am working with a highly developed soul who is approaching guide status. The very young soul, who has been to Earth less than 5 times, sees their council differently than all my other subjects. As the following quote illustrates, there are 4 of us who play a lot. We do silly things when our teacher, Minari, is not around. My friends and I hold hands when it is time to be taken to see 2 important people. We go to a place which has bright colors, everywhere. There is a man and woman sitting in 2 high-backed chairs with big smiles on their faces. They have just finished with a small group of kids who wave at us on their way out. This couple are in their early 30s, I would guess. They could be our parents. They are loving and kind and beckon us forward. They just ask a few questions on how we are getting along and what we would like to do in our next life. We are told to pay close attention to everything Minari tells us. It's like Christmas in a department store with 2 Santas. The fact that more than one soul would appear before a council meeting is a dead giveaway that my subject is still considered a child soul. I learned that this individual had only been to Earth once before his current life. In my experience, somewhere between the 2nd and 5th life this sort of council scene is altered. One client who had just made such a transition exclaimed, "Oh, how things have changed. This meeting is more formal than last time. I am a little anxious. There is a long table and I am being asked by 3 older people to describe my progress to them. It's similar to having just finished an exam and now it's time to find out how you've scored." The typical client sees between 3 to 7 members on their council. An advanced soul might have from 7 to 12 elders. This is not a hard and fast rule by any means. However, as souls develop and become more complex, they appear to require more specialists on their panels. I do find that less developed souls are frequently unable to differentiate between individual council members, except for their chairperson and perhaps one other elder at the table. These 2 elders seem to be most engaged with the case, while those elders who are not directly questioning the soul are rather hazy in the background. It strikes me that there is some sort of protocol connected with council seating arrangements. The members arrange themselves in a row with the less active participants located at the ends of the table. Almost always, there is a chairperson seated at the center, directly in front of the soul. This elder is the primary questioner and may also be referred to as a director or moderator. The number of council members who attend these meetings can change each time we see them, depending upon the circumstances of the life just lived and the one to come. Our chairperson, and perhaps 1 or 2 other elders, are normally present over great spans of time between many lives. Another curious aspect of this procedure to me is that members of the same soul group usually go before different councils. I suppose this is due to the different character aspects of each soul and their state of development. My clients are unable to explain why this is so. When I am told by a client that a member of their council has just reappeared on the panel after an absence involving a number of lives, or if a new member has appeared, I take notice. A male client told me, after my last life I saw a new female member on my council. She was not unkind, but gently critical of my continued insensitivity to women in my past lives. She is here to help me develop a plan to overcome my tendency to shut women out of my life. This is hindering my development. Apparently, specialists come into our panels at certain times to lend their expertise if we continue to fall into the same ruts. While facing three elders, a subject remarked, "Only the director in the center speaks to me. The elder on my left emanates warm, benevolent energy toward me, while the one on the right sends me serenity. It is as if I needed tranquility at this moment because we are talking about my coping with angry emotions in life." Another client of mine explained what had been happening at her recent council meetings in this way: "After many of my recent lives, my council has changed from three members to four, then back to three, then four. I noticed this fourth member appears to be a bright silver color while the others have deep hues of violet. I call him my counselor for confidence. Invariably, when I see him sitting on my panel, I know I am going to get a lecture on my lack of confidence. He tells me I'm a reticent soul, afraid to push myself with others even when I know I'm right. One tell him how fearful I am on earth, and he gently explains that when I extend myself I become greatly loved and appreciated. I am afraid of confrontation and lives of adversity. He says, we never give you more than you can handle, keep extending yourself, you have much to offer." This subject chose to be a woman of small stature and ordinary features in her current life, rather than accepting a tempting offer of another body choice as a dazzling beauty. She told me there was the expectation that this silver counselor of confidence would be happy with this added challenge, along with her also accepting a life with parents who belittled and devalued her while she was growing up. One asked this client what single statement from the silver council member was most sustaining to her over the last few centuries. She replied, "That which you gain from each difficult life, you gain for all eternity." Where a personal guide will review how we prioritized our objectives and analyze each step after a life, our elders ask moreover V-type questions. The council just doesn't inquire into our most immediate past life. Lines of questioning follow across the sum of all our lives and cover the larger picture of our progress toward self-fulfillment. The elders wish to explore if we are developing to our potential. I have come to believe that the committee is carefully balanced by certain elders whose character and background have some sort of common ground with the souls who come before them. Sometimes I see a personal affinity between an elder and one of my clients. Individual elders seem to identify with a soul's character, strengths and weaknesses, interests and purposes. Despite what I have just said, I must add that the vast majority of people in hypnosis do not feel really close to the elders on their councils. They have reverence and veneration for them, but not the deep affection they display toward their spiritual guides. This is why the following case is so exceptional. Case 38, Dr. N, do you see any new faces on your council since the last time you went before them? S, with a sudden gasp, then a deep sigh of pleasure, "At last. Renda has come back. Oh, am one glad to see him again." Dr. N, who is Renda? Note, subject is shaking and does not respond. Dr. N, now, take another deep breath and relax for me so together we can discover what is going on. Where is Renda sitting? S, to the left of center at the table, still musing, "It's been so long, Dr. N. How many earth years have passed since you last saw Renda?" S, tearfully, after a long pause, "Some, 3,000 years, Dr. N. This must represent a multitude of lives for you. Why has Renda been away so long?" I, S, still tearful, but regaining composure, "You don't understand the significance of his coming back on my council. Render is very old and wise, he is so peaceful. He was with me before my earth cycles, past lives, had numbered so many. Render told me I was showing great promise and developing rapidly, I was receiving assignments of importance, and then, subject stops, choking up again. Dr. N, softly, you are doing fine. Please go on and tell me what happened to you. S, after another long pause, I fell from grace. I fell into the traps that so many of us do here. I grew too confident with my power. Assuming positions of authority over others was fun. It didn't matter what kind of body I had. I became self-indulgent and selfish in life after life. Render warned me about slowing down my progress and I made promises to him I did not keep. So many lives, wasted, I squandered away opportunities, and corrupted my knowledge and power. Dr. N, well, obviously you have turned things around recently or Render would not be here. S, I have been working so hard to improve in the last 500 years. To care about others, to engage in service to others, to feel compassion, and now my reward. Render is back. Subject begins to shake violently and cannot talk. Dr. N, after a break where I do my best to compose this client, what does Render first say to you at the moment you see him after his long absence? S, he gives me a warm smile and says, it's good to be working with you again. Dr. N, just like that? That's it? S, nothing else is necessary. I feel the power of his great mind and know that once again he has confidence in my future. Dr. N, what do you say to him? S, I vow not to slip back again. Render's color was reported as a phosphorescent violet robe. The garment worn by both guides and council members is almost always a robe, sometimes described as a tunic. Spirits don't need clothes any more than they require buildings as places to live in the spirit world. As with so many other images people have of their spiritual life, this too is metaphoric. As pure energy, elders have deep shades of purple but the colors of their robes may be different. The symbolism of wearing robes confers dignity, honor and a sense of history in the minds of people who report on them. People associate robes with the fields of law, academics and theology in human society. There are many clues a therapist can gain from questioning hypnosis subjects about the colors of the robes worn by each elder on their council. These robes appear for the edification of souls from Earth. When I began to gather information about the variety of robe colors, I assumed that these differences conferred some sort of status or rank to an elder in the minds of people. During my early investigations into this aspect of the spirit world, I asked questions based upon my faulty assumptions about authority. I found the garments worn by these beings, their seating positions at the table, and the degree of participation by each council member was not hierarchical. White and purple are the most common robe colors seen by my clients. Since they are at opposite ends of the color spectrum, this may seem incongruous. However, as case 31 explained, white is receptive energy to beginners while it is also a color of transference or intervention by advanced senders of thought. The white energy of younger souls denotes a process of continual self-cleansing and renewal. For the more advanced, it signifies purity and clarity. The reason white robes are seen so frequently on council members, and with guides at the gateway to the spirit world, is that here white represents the transmission of knowledge and wisdom. White energy robes, or white as a halo aura on an enlightened being, signifies harmonizing and aligning thought with universal energy. Purple is the color of wisdom and deep understanding. Council members with purple and violet robes reflect their ability to govern the affairs of the souls who come before them with benevolence and love born out of vast experience. These energy colors reflected on an elder's robe have an idealistic quality of perfection bestowed upon the wearer by my clients. Black robes are never seen, but once in a while an apprehensive subject will call the elder's judges when they initially enter the council chamber. Once inside, though, no soul visualizes this meeting space as a courtroom. Hoods, four square hats and skull caps, all having an antiquarian flavor, may be seen on the elders. Hoods are usually thrown back from the head, which is less ominous to the viewer. These visualizations remind me of religious orders, such as the Dominicans, who wear hoods with white robes. These earthly influences of robes and tunics made out of cloth go back a long way in our history. The garments and other accoutrements reported by my subjects on elders are trappings which engender respect and reverence to wise beings who, like oracles, interpret events in a soul's existence. The next case is a level I soul who has just entered the council chamber after his last life ended in 1937. Case 39, Dr. N, how many elders do you have on your council? S, I prefer to call them the wise ones. There are six sitting at the table. Dr. N, explain to me what each wise one is wearing and give me your impressions of what you see. S, pause, well, the one in the center is wearing a purple robe and the others are white mixed with purple, except the one on the far right, she is mostly white with a touch of yellow. She is more animated toward me than the others. Dr. N, what do all these colors mean to you? S, it kind of depends upon the life I have just lived. The wise one in white on the right wants me to see things more clearly. The yellow-robed person has something to do with my giving and receiving support, but I don't know what that has to do with me right now. I remember someone else was in her place two lives ago who wore a crimson robe. That was when I returned home, to the spirit world, after being physically crippled. Dr. N, what did you think of when you saw her red robe two lives ago? S, it's physical, a body-oriented color. The crimson one dealt with karmic influences involving that body. I was really worn down and angry after that life. There was a wise one wearing green then, too, which I don't see now. Dr. N, why green? S, they are skilled at healing, mental and physical. Dr. N, and do you usually see all these colors in the robes worn by the wise ones? S, as a matter of fact, no. Mostly, I see them all wearing about the same purple color tones. This time I'm supposed to be getting some special messages. Dr. N, let's talk about the purple robed being in the middle. Do you think this is someone important? S, laughs at me, hey, they are all important. Dr. N, okay, someone more significant to you than the others. S, yeah, he's the leader. He sort of directs things. Dr. N, why is that, do you think? S, because the others seem to defer to him. He conducts things. Mostly, the others seem to speak through him. Dr. N, do you know his name? S, laughs, no way. We don't circulate in the same social circle around here. Dr. N, how does the meeting open for you? S, the director says to me, welcome, we are glad to have you with us again. Dr. N, what do you say? S, thank you, but I'm thinking, I hope this goes all right. Dr. N, what kind of thoughts do you pick up then from the chairman who seems to be running things? S, he doesn't want me to feel the wise ones are so superior that I can't talk to them. This meeting is for me. Then he says, how do you feel about your progress since we saw you last? Did you learn anything new we can talk about? Pause. This is the way these meetings open. They want to hear what I have to say. Dr. N, do you feel more relaxed now? S, yeah. Dr. N, give me an idea of how things proceed from here. S, pause, we start with what I did right. I had a successful company which employed many people in my past life. I'm turning this over in my mind. I want to make a good impression by telling them about my charity contributions, you know, my good acts. Pause, then things drift into the way I ran my company, my inability to avoid conflicts, disagreements and anger with my employees. Subject grows agitated, it's so frustrating, and I'm working on this, but then, stops. Dr. N, please go on. Does your guide assist you in any way with this? S, my guide Joe Aquin speaks from behind me. He sums up the main parts of my life and my objectives to contribute to society by employing people during the Depression. Dr. N, sounds good to me. Are you happy with the manner in which Joe Aquin is presenting you to the wise ones? S, well, yes.